Today we continue on the story. Now, if you're here for the first time or it's been a while since you've been here, you might want to know what is going on. We are going through a book called The Story, and it's basically a chronological scriptures going through the chronological order of the Bible. And we're in week 9. So if you're here today and you would be interested in that, we have some books available out there in the lobby called The Story that you can pick up, and also there's some for teens, and there's some children's story books also. And then after the service today, during our Sunday school hour, we have opportunities for children and youth, but we also have opportunities for you to join a FOB group. You might say, well, what's a FOB group? A FOB group is Fellowship of Believers Groups, where we have had people come together and discuss and study the different stories that we talk about on a Sunday morning. So if you have any questions about that, you can ask me. I'm sure you've all seen some of the videos on YouTube or Facebook, but there's one video that stood out to me. It was a video of a kid opening a birthday present. Oh, he was anticipating this gift. He was absolutely sure it was going to be an Xbox. And so he took that present and he starts ripping apart the wrapping paper. His excitement turned to confusion. Because when he opened up the package, on the box said, a pottery wheel. Fun for the whole family. He looks at his mom and dad. He's bewildered. He's confused. He says, what are you trying to do? Don't you know me at all? Don't you know what I really want? I've told you so many times. And then that confusion turned to hurt. Why did my siblings get everything they wanted, but I didn't? It doesn't seem fair. From excitement to confusion to hurt to anger, he threw down the box, he kicked it, and ran back to his room. The video ends that portion at this part of the story. And I thought about that. Sometimes hope leads to disillusionment. Oh, it's funny when we hear about a child and a gift, but for those of us who are adults in the room, we aren't off the hook either. Because we expect certain things to happen, and if it doesn't, we become disillusioned, confused, hurt, and angered. Example. Your wife had given you the shoe size and the exact shoe that you were to get for Christmas. And when she got the box and she ripped open the wrapping paper, she says, well, it looks like a shoebox. It is a shoebox. And when she opened it up, there was a subscription for a month's supply of Nutrisystem. Well, a gentleman was anticipating, desired, and made it very clear that he wanted an iPhone for Christmas. And so when he got the package, it looked about the size of an iPhone box, and he ripped open the thing, and it looked like a box. When he opened it up, it was a nose hair clippers. Not exactly what he wanted. You know, there's times in life where we get not what we want, maybe sometimes what we need. And so, those of us who are adults, yeah, we don't stomp and we don't go running into our rooms, but in our hearts, in our own hearts as adults, sometimes we are confused. We have excitement about something and it turns to disillusionment. It turns to confusion. It turns to hurt and it turns to anger. But we're better sometimes of hiding that, of suppressing it. and what you thought was going to be in your life has maybe not turned out the same way. And the stories are like presents when we open them. We thought we were going to get one thing, and we ended up getting something completely different. And so today we have this story, in the story, chapter 9, in the time of Judges, which we talked about last week, this small little book of Ruth. I mean, it seems out of place. I mean, if you look through the Bible, you would say to yourself, what's this doing in there? It's not about Judges. It's not even really about Israel. It's a story about a family of seemingly little importance. Why is it even in there? Well, the story of Ruth starts with a husband, Elimelech, and his wife, Naomi. Now, Naomi's name means sweet, pleasant. And I think she could recall to those days when her name fit her disposition. Her life on her wedding day when she married Elimelech. And the birth of her two sons, joy was in her heart. But I'm going to pick up the story a little differently this morning. There was two women who were walking along the Judea desert. One elderly, Naomi, and one younger, Ruth. All they had was each other. 10 years prior, there was this famine in Israel that had driven Naomi and Elimelech out of their homeland. And they migrated to Moab. Yes, Moab, the enemy territory. Not far. This had implications because, as we've talked about the Promised Land, when the Promised Land was given to the people, each person got a little slice of that land. And that land has significance. And that land meant something to a family. But if you can't sustain yourself, if you can't put bread on the table, this family had to go look for something to sustain them. And they ended up in Moab. And they found fertile soil to farm. And Naomi, I'm sure, reflected on her time. I'm sure she lamented that she lost her home. But she says, well, I got my husband, and I got my two boys. I got God, so I'm okay. Then tragedy struck. Naomi's husband died, and also her two sons then found wives in Moab. And that they were, in other words, they were Moab wives. And so the death of her husband and then the joy of these two weddings. But these two weddings were quickly followed by two funerals. No grandkids. She loses her two sons. There's grief. She's stricken with grief. Some of you know loss. Some of you know deep loss. And some of you, if you don't, you probably will. Edgar Jackson writes this about grief. He says this: grief is a silent, knife-like terror and sadness that comes 100 times a day when you start to speak to someone who is no longer there. Grief is the emptiness that comes when you eat alone after eating with another for many years. Grief is teaching yourself to go to bed without saying goodnight to the one who had died. Grief is the helpless wishing that things were different when you know they are not and never will be again. Grief is a whole cluster of adjustments, apprehensions, and uncertainties that strike life in its forward progress and make it difficult to redirect the energies of life. I think that was Naomi's position at that time. She was in a foreign land, and so she decided to go back to her hometown of Bethlehem to maybe to find some hope in the midst of the rubble of her life. And one of her daughter-in-laws, Ruth, says, I'm going with you. And so now it's reversed. Naomi was a foreigner, and Ruth was a hometown girl. And now back in Bethlehem, Naomi was the hometown girl, and Ruth was the foreigner. No money, no possessions. And Naomi points out this time in her life when she goes back and she sees the friends and people she had been in contact with, they look at her and they see her face drawn and her eyes sunken and something has changed. And they say, is that Naomi? And when they ask her, is that Naomi? She goes, don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara. Because my life went from pleasant to bitter. God made my life bitter. I'm angry at God. God has not held up his end of the deal. This was not how the story was supposed to go. When I opened the gift, this is not the package I signed up for. So this story of Ruth, what really is it about? Is it about loss? Yes, it's about loss. Does God have a solution for times of loss? Times of doubt, drought, debt, disease, and conflict? Maybe you're wondering if really there is a story to all of this. If you are wondering this morning, then maybe this story of Ruth is for you. Does the story of Ruth have to be about loss? Could it be about our response to loss? Yes, that could be the story. Does loss have to define us? I don't know, but it's hard. Is my life about loss, or could it be about something different? It's so hard for Naomi because she sees the box. And the box says disappointment. The box says tragedy. The box says I'm angry. Or is the story of Ruth about redemption? Because the word redemption is listed 21 times. And so here's Naomi and Ruth are now back in Bethlehem. Their security was found in their husband, and their future was found in their sons, and they had neither. And so the book of Ruth has different parts and scenes. And the first scene would be this. Ruth says, I'm going to go out and try to find some grain that I can make some bread for us. And so Ruth heads out and she finds a field and she scavenges enough grain for bread. It wasn't just any field. Oh, for her it was just any field. But for the story, it wasn't just any field. It was Boaz's field. Boaz was a bachelor. He had a good life. Things were good. Business was good. Ruth was not the first person to come and scavenge some food and grain from his fields. But she was the first one to steal his heart. Their eyes met, and Boaz did what many men will do. He tried to find out who she is. Tried to find her Facebook status. Upgraded her workstation, made sure that she was secure and being helped. In a word, he gave her grace. And the reason we know that is because in Ruth 2:13, and in the message, what I think says it the best, it says this, oh, sir, such grace, such kindness, I do not deserve it. You touched my heart. You're treating me like one of your own. I do not belong here. And then we know that she went home with about 30 pounds of grain and with a smile on her face and a skip in her step. And when she got home to Naomi, Naomi heard the story and recognized the name Boaz. She's like, Boaz, Boaz, Boaz. That rings a bell. Oh, he was the kid that was at some of the family reunions. Oh, that's Rahab's boy. We're related to him. So Naomi's mind started churning. Mother-in-law's minds can churn and can think about things. And she thought about the possibilities. And so Naomi gives instruction to Ruth and says this: wash, put on perfume, and get dressed in your best clothes. Then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do. Pause. What is this story doing in the Bible? Is this Moabite seduction? What is this story doing in the Bible? What was Naomi thinking? What was her rationale? She may have been thinking a couple things. The first one, she may have been thinking that it was time for Ruth to get on with her life, to take off her mourning clothes and put on regular clothes. Because being dressed in black and in mourning is not very good to find a date. Especially if you're a respectful man, you will not approach that person. Maybe it was Naomi just saying, Ruth, it's time to get out and about. Maybe Naomi was thinking about a law that came to her mind and she was going to use to help their situation. And that was the law of the kinsman redeemer, or the law of a guardian redeemer. Now, this law is complex, but let me try to take it down to a Spark Notes version. It would read like this: if a man died without children, his property was transferred not to his wife, but to his brother. And the brother then would keep the land and the clan. Because remember, the promised land was very vital and important for families. But this made the widow vulnerable. She didn't have anything. So to protect the widow, the brother of the deceased man was to marry the childless widow. If the deceased man had no brother, then the nearest male relative, kin, provided the widow. Now, he did not have to marry, but it was important to keep the land and the family and would give some protection for the widow. But he could marry the widow. This was called the law of the kinsman redeemer. And so Naomi, to her credit, and her understanding of genealogy, her understanding of how this law works, decided to do something. And so Ruth went, and this is what it says: after Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of the grain. Then Ruth went in secretly, uncovered his feet, and laid down. In the middle of the night, something startled the man, Boaz. He turned, and there was a woman lying at his feet. And he asked, who are you? Now, this, what Ruth did, was like a wedding proposal. When he says, who are you? She says, I am your servant, Ruth. Spread the corner of your cloak garment over me, since you are a guardian redeemer of our family. Now, the family tree was not as good as they had hoped. Boaz was a relative but had no obligation to marry. And after all, Ruth was a Moabite. She was a foreigner. But you notice in the story, Boaz kicked into action. He convened a meeting of all of the leaders, which is what they did at that time. And then he also summoned a man who was a closer relative to Naomi than he was. And this is what he said. He said, okay, we're having a meeting. He told this closer relative, here's the deal. Here's land out here. Do you want to purchase this land? And of course, everyone wants to get land. It's the most valuable thing. And the man who was closer relative said, absolutely, I want to buy it. But then Boaz does something remarkable. He showed this closer relative the fine print. Sometimes we have to look at the fine print. He showed him the fine print. And he said, here's the fine print. On the day you buy the land from Naomi, guess what? You have good news. You also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the dead man's widow, in order to maintain the name of the dead with his property. In other words, he said, the small fine print says this. You get two ladies to take care of. Well, the story tells us that he balked at the offer. And as soon as the other kinsmen declined, Boaz took Ruth as his wife. We have a story that God redeems the story with an unpredictable ending. If you can imagine how this ending went, there was Boaz and Ruth and Naomi and this little baby with a family photo. It was an important family photo. It was a family photo with a new baby, and that new baby was named Obed. And you think in the story, well, it's just another family photo. People always take photos when a baby is born. But this has significance. This genealogy that we find at the end of the story is so crucial to the story. Because Obed went on to raise a son, Jesse, who fathered David. So here we have in this Ruth story a genealogy that we start to see. And then if you go back to Matthew 1 and the genealogy of Jesus, you find some of these same names are found in that genealogy. See, God takes all the pieces of this story, all of the seemingly disillusionment, the confusion, the hurt, and the anger, and he puts it into something so beautiful. Well, back to the box story. The video doesn't end there. The video now continues with the mother who went and picked up the box that had been thrown across the room, went and knocked on the door of her son and begged him, please come out and open your gift. You haven't seen what is inside the gift. And so the son sheepishly, kind of begrudgingly comes out, still sees that box that says pottery wheel. Fun for the whole family. But he swallows, and he takes a little lump, and he goes and he opens up the box. And there in that box was not only an Xbox, but was an extra controller and many games. The mom did not try to trick her son, but she had so many more things to give than just the Xbox. It could not fit in the Xbox package. See, as I think about the story of Ruth, as I think about this video, I think about this. Before we stomp out of the room because we don't like what we see in the box, I encourage you to wait to see what is in the box. See, in this story, there's not a lot of things about God in the story. You see, in this story, it could almost seem like this upper story that we keep talking about in the lower story, that maybe God's not even really in this story. Because for most of the stories we've gone through so far in the story, we have seen great miracles, haven't we? We've seen parting of seas. We have seen the flood. We have seen so many things that have happened and these wonderful miracles that we can see the upper story very clearly. But in this little story tucked just past Judges, we find that God is at work. It's not some miracle. It's not some big boom moment. It's not some awe. But what we find threaded throughout the whole story of Ruth is this amazing thing that God is at work. God is at work in these great things, but God is also at work in some of the small things. So if you have this morning and you're dealing with a box that maybe is labeled widow, divorced, terminated, broken, sick, infertile, do not let that be your story. Your story doesn't have to be about loss. Yes, it is an important part of the story, but about redemption. You see, what we find in the story of Ruth is that God can do so many things with all the pieces that seem like. And we look at it and we say, God, where are you at? And we go from hope and good times to confusion, from hurt and anger. Because what we see in the box, without opening it all up and completely knowing God's story, we, like that little child, just want to kick that box across the room and say, I'm done. We are ending with an incredible hymn. To God be the glory. The last verse of this hymn is really important. It says, to God be the glory, great things he has taught us, great things he has done. Now, when we hear that word great things, we automatically go to the miracles, we automatically go to these wonderful things. But I am inviting you to understand that part of your story and the great things that God has done might not be with fireworks and with everything, but we can see that throughout our story and God's story, that God is at work. And we have our own kinsman redeemer, Jesus Christ, who has redeemed us, who loves us and cares for us. And no matter what we think about the box and maybe some of the hopes and dreams that have gone down with that box, Jesus says, I can redeem you. I can restore you. And your loss and the things that happened, yeah, that's part of your story. But sometimes we have to wait and we have to take a chance and we have to open the box to see that God has much more there than we ever anticipated. When we put God in a box, he stays in a box. But God doesn't want to be in a box because God is our great redeemer through Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen.